Blog Talk Radio.
Fantasy, sports, and politics.
Get ready to rumble!
You wanna talk back? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy, sports, and politics.
It's Mr. FSP. I'm here because I am. I mean, I forgot the saying, you know, I exist because I am or something like that. I can't remember right now. But it's me. I'm the one that's going to hold it down as my co-hosts get themselves together and call in. You're listening to Fantasy Sports and Politics. We happen every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then again, we have other shows during the week on Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, and now Friday. We'll talk a little bit about that later. But on today's show, you can expect a little bit of NFL talk, namely the Cleveland Browns and their situation. We'll talk about NBA playoffs. How the Bulls are out, the Clippers are almost out, and the Lakers are almost out. Can you believe it? Can you believe it? We'll talk a little bit about that. We're going to touch on Junior Seau's memorial. Yet a lot of different people show up and a lot of different people say some things. We'll hear from LaDainian Tomlinson on Junior Seau and what he means to him and what we should be doing now. We're also going to touch upon the subject matter of whether or not his parents have decided to allow his brain to be studied. It's a controversial subject because a lot of the higher-ups in the NFL don't believe in the science that has gone into studying the concussions and the effect on the brain. They say they do, but several years ago, as well as recently, I would say maybe a year ago, some dispute, I'll say, took place over the validity of how concussions from football have affected some of these players maybe 5 or 10 years down the road. It's a very, very, very deep and sore subject. I really wanted to have our Dr. Solano on today, but he'll be here on the 2nd of June, so we can't speak about that with him, but we'll speculate, and then when he comes back on the 2nd of June, we'll touch upon it again. Also, we'll talk about the Josh Beckett situation in Boston. In Boston. Is that franchise just out of control, or is it the players? I mean, Francona couldn't control him last year, and Bobby V looks like he's the anti-Francona, and the players aren't gravitating to him. It's a dicey situation, and Bobby V stepped in, talking about Bobby Valentine, to try and fix it. But is it too late? Is it time to break up the boys in Boston? And is this latest situation an example of such? I don't know. But we'll talk about that. And we'll hear from Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods, he's back on the links. We'll see what Tiger has to say and whether or not he's going to be prepared and focused on the task at hand. Well, while we wait for my co-host to jump in, I'll give you the phone number to call in if you want to jump in on the conversation. The number is 347-637-3220. Again, the number is 347-637-3220. And it's not toll free, so I'm sorry. But what I want to do right now is I want to talk a little bit about Junior Seau and this brain injury possible situation, because it's a lot of things going on with it. First of all, if you kill yourself, if you commit suicide, there's a lot of different religious beliefs and things like that, where you go and how you're received and so on and so forth. But typically, if someone were to kill themselves, it would not be in the manner in which Junior Seau decided to commit suicide. Dave Durson, former Chicago Bear, did the same thing to himself. He killed himself in the same manner, shot himself in the heart, and took his own life not too long ago. The difference is Dave left a letter stating he wanted his brain to be examined for, I can't remember the exact title of the disease, but it deals with brain trauma. And the deal is this. I was listening to an ESPN story on 360, and one of Junior Seau's best friends had just recently paid him a visit and stayed with him for a little while, and they spoke about the Dave Durson suicide and this, that, and the third, and the speculation, again, I say the speculation, is that Junior Seau killed himself in that manner so that his brain could be studied, so that others can see what the depression is and things of that nature, and see if it's the withdrawal, the concussions, the brain of an 80-year-old like Andre Waters. Is it, you know, the torment that these guys go through after football? Short-term memory loss, things of that nature, long-term memory loss, you know, the parents of Junior Seau are very religious and spiritual. We're not going to get into their beliefs and things of that nature, but they are spiritual people. And they made a decision that they're not going to make public on whether or not Junior Seau will have his brain studied. Now, this is important because if it's made public, you know, that, okay, the parents want to have Junior's brain examined, then it becomes a whole publicity thing. How soon can we get the results? This, that, and the third. You know, is there a real big issue with football and concussions? I had a friend, well, I had a friend who appears on this show from time to time, state that it looks like it's getting to the point where football could be banned. I mean, football, a sport that's been around for, what, 75 years, 80 years, 90 years, whatever it is. Yeah, it's about 90 years, if I'm not mistaken. How it could be almost banned because of these concussions and the injuries. We hear, as recently this week, Chris Carter talking about how he had a little bounty on Romanowski, because Romanowski said he's going to take him out the game, da-da-da-da-da, yada-yada-yada. Now, listen. We all, if you've played sports, we've all had the moment, if we're playing defense, where we're talking smack and we're talking about we're going to put this guy out and, you know, in your career, da-da-da-da-da. Now, with Romanowski, you never knew. He spits in people's faces. He steps on them. He does all these dirty little things, or he did all these dirty little things. So you never knew if he was serious or not. But Chris Carter admits, yeah, he said this, and I told my guys I'd give him X, Y, Z if, you know, Romanowski wasn't in the game. Again, I'm taking the side of players injuring other players, causing some of these issues. When I say I'm taking the side of, that doesn't mean I support it. What I mean is I'm going to express my opinion from that side. And I really believe the NFL and Roger Goodell, they take the same position, especially when it comes to these labor disputes and agreements and things of that nature. We'll talk about the referees once I'm finished with Junior Seau. But if a player or a coach, because, you know, you got Greg Williams and the New Orleans Saints and probably other NFL franchises involved too, if a player takes it upon himself to say, you know, I'm going to take him out, whoever it is, I'm going to take him out. Is it, or should it be taken in the sense of literally he's going to try to end his career, literally he's going to, you know, hit him so hard that he passes away? I mean, trust me, it could happen. Don't think, you know, football accidents that take place on the field don't actually end up in tragic events, especially once they get them off the field, out of the TV spotlight. Some terrible things happen. But if a player or coach or whomever takes those words literally, like they're going to go and like Greg Williams said, actually target a person's body part, that becomes a part of the player's psyche, and they become animals, and they just want to physically destroy whatever's across from them. How does this tie into Junior Seau? Junior Seau was an animal on the football field. I don't believe he needed a lot of pumping up by the coaches or anybody else because he had high energy. He played the game of football the way that a lot of people needed to play it. The question now becomes, did he play it so well that he ended up with depression or dementia, whatever the case may be, where his brain, because of all the hits, took its toll? Now, football fans out there, you got to remember, they recently came out with these new helmets that are designed to be better for concussions. Consequently, those helmets are also more expensive than your regular helmet or the helmets that Junior wore back in the day, the helmet I wore when I was in high school and played semi-pro football. A lot different. But they're also more expensive. See, big businesses have decided your health is worth a lot. So we're going to charge you a bunch of money to have a better protected helmet instead of making it affordable so that others won't have to deal with certain situations. It's plain and simple. The healthier something is for you, the more expensive it becomes. Case in point, organic milk. You know, not pasteurized, all that stuff. It's like $5 for a half a gallon of milk. But it's better for you than the regular, you know, pasteurized, steroid-injected milk that you get from, you know, the steroid and stuff-fed cows. They can mass-produce that. They can get that quick. Junior Seau and his situation typifies that a person can be as organic and as because he was very health conscious, by the way. Someone can be as organic and as clean as the next person or the best person, end up in a bad situation and do devastating things such as taking his life. Some people want to say Junior killed himself because his business was going bad, his marriage had ended, he had a live-in girlfriend, and they weren't doing too well. They want to put it all off on that. That's why it's important to study this man's brain. Again, I don't know what his parents have decided, but I hope it's to let, you know, this organization study his brain. What the NFL is afraid of is that if so many of these players have the same type of situation, the sport will be gone. Ricky, you know, my buddy Ricky, we had a conversation earlier this week. He said the same thing, that if this continues, that the sport of football will get banned because of the long-term circumstances. Long-term circumstances. It's a very, very slippery slope. Now, last week, Jerry and I talked about it, and, you know, we tossed around a couple of ideas, but the more and more this plays out, the more and more I think that Junior Seau suffered from some sort of dementia or depression, and he hit it very well, to begin, to say the least, to us. He hit it very well. But that's just like what Dave Durison's kid said in the ESPN interview, that to the public, Dave was, you know, happy-go-lucky. But he said when he was at home, it was a total, he took out every bit of anger and anguish out on his family. He would yell at work, but then become physical and mentally abusive at home. We don't know what Junior Seau's situation was, but his wife did divorce him several years ago, citing mental and physical abuse. I'm just connecting the dots, ladies and gentlemen. I'm playing a soundbite from LaDainian Tomlinson on how we should be thinking about Junior Seau. But I want you guys, if you can remember back, or if you can see some tape, Junior Seau was a very good person on the field and to the public from what we knew. But there are some issues there that we need to study, and I pray that his family allows him, his brain, to be examined. But here's LT on how we should be remembering Junior Seau. And it'll play now.
He instilled in everybody he touched the things you taught him. So don't be sad today. Be happy. Because Junior lives through us. Everybody in here, everybody that he touched, he lived through us.
So with that, I'm going to bring in my co-host, the ATM, and we're going to let him dig in this subject matter just a little bit and see what you got to say. What's going on?
Nothing much, my man. How you been?
I've been living la vida.
You still coherent after the beatdown I'm giving you?
You know, we'll get to that.
Okay,
that,
no problem.
That is
I understand
temporary.
You want to talk about. I understand you want to talk about Junior Seau. If you listen to my my end of my program on Sunday, I had touched upon this. I don't know if you listened to it or not, but this is one of the things I had touched upon about these guys.
90 people did.
Huh? Excuse me.
90 people did.
Yeah, I was surprised, man. When you sent that to me, I was like, "What? You got to be kidding me." What I had said was, a lot of football players, quite naturally, because it's the nature of the sport they play, have high egos. In fact, professional sports guys that play professional sports, or women, professional athletes have high egos. Guys who play football have very extremely high egos, and I would say march to a different drummer. There's a lot of machoism that goes into playing football. And when you walk out away from the sport, if you are dealing with problems that have resulted from playing the sport, the attitude of a man and the on top of being a professional athlete with the type of sport he plays, especially professional football, hiding injuries or downplaying injuries or saying, I can overcome this, has a tendency to be eternalized versus being getting help in a man, a lot of men, not all men, a lot of men, especially ones that play professional sports, is a sign, is portrayed as a sign of weakness. And a lot of men in professional sports, and I'm not a professional, this is just my opinion, don't want to take that step either with a family member, with a relative, when I say a family member, with a husband, with a wife, with a son, with a daughter, with a father or mother, or even with a trained professional that can help them deal with whatever problems they're going to, whether it's something mentally or physically. These guys, for one reason or another, in my opinion, don't deal with it the way they should deal with it, and eternalize. And some of these guys, I think, have a hard time dealing with being less than what they consider a man, mentally or physically, and it wears on them. They come into a state of depression or whatever brain trauma that they have happened to them during the time they play professional football, cause them to have dementia or whatever. And don't seek the proper help to have them deal with it mentally. And you have things like this. You have Dave Duerson taking his life. You have Junior Seau possibly taking his life because of physical or mental problems that he was having. And I can't think of the other ones. There was a...
Andre Waters.
Right, exactly. There was a few of them that they showed on ESPN, and I can't think of all of them. But I'm just Junior Seau and Dave Duerson are the most recent and most on people's minds right now because they're the most recent. So
and the manner in which they took their lives.
Exactly. So I can't see him outlawing the sport. It's a very popular sport. It's a very lucrative sport. I can see them trying to make it safer than it has been in the past, meaning helmet-wise or whatever other type of medical knowledge that can be put into the game so it can make it safer for the players. I don't see the game get outlawed. I just see the framework of the game possibly changing.
Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to get in on the conversation, you can always dial 347-637-3220. Again, that's 347-637-3220. And since Jerry brought it up, I just wanted to let him know that Hamilton just struck out, and that gave me a category that he had, and it's going to continue to trend that way for the rest of the day and the rest of tomorrow.
Well, wait a minute. Don't just jump in like that and try to jump out without me having to respond to that, because know that's not going to happen.
The thing is, we're on football, and I just saw it. I just thought I'd throw it in there.
It's a little backhanded slap in the face, but that's okay, because I can wait until you're ready to get your beat down. So you should go on whatever framework of the show you want to go. I'll wait my turn, and then when it happens, just be ready.
Oh, I'm ready. I was born ready there, buddy.
Okay.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to stick in the football, but rest in peace, Junior Seau. I hope that the family did make the decision to allow the Institute to study his brain. If they didn't, I think it's a mistake. So we'll leave it at that. Let's turn to some rookies, some guys just beginning their NFL career. and we're going to talk about the Cleveland Browns. Two sound bites here I want to play. The first one is from the third overall pick of the Browns, which is Trent Richardson. It seems as though Trent Richardson had some trouble at his first minicamp holding on to the ball. He was fumbling off the handoff against air. Let's see what Trent has to say about what caused all that.
You got to get used to, you know, the double numbers and your jerseys kind of like slip. Kind of like slippery, you know, in practice you don't have double numbers or, well, I didn't have double numbers or I didn't have a slick jersey. So it's a new jersey, so we had to get used to it.
So the young rookie's blaming his fumble problems on the slickness of the jersey. Three straight handoffs that he received from Brandon Whedon in the minicamp, he fumbled. So that's that. I mean, hopefully he doesn't have a fumbling problem. But I'll tell you what, Adrian Peterson came into the league having fumbling problems, and he was still okay and still is okay. I hope that doesn't happen in Brandon. In Trent Richardson's case, I hope he's still a very, very valuable player, minus the fumbles, because he's a big prospect, a very big prospect. Where's Brandon Whedon on winning the job of quarterback?
You know, obviously, I hope I'm the guy, and I'm going to do everything in my power to be that guy. But, you know, you got to take it one step at a time. I got to continue to keep learning, and, you know, let's see how things kind of pan out.
So, Mr. ATM, what do you think about the two rookies up in Cleveland?
Mixed bag. I love the pick that they took, Trent Richardson. You know, I'm a running back type of guy. I love running backs. This guy is a triple threat, can catch it, block it, and throw it, and run it. Brandon Whedon, I'm not too high on. I really don't
I am.
Well, see, that's why I'm the master, and you're still trying to catch me. Understand
it's
something
right
here. Brandon Whedon is 28 years old, and he's going to be a rookie in the NFL. He's, in my opinion, he's behind a learning curve because he's 28, and now he's got to catch up. He doesn't have that far to, I would say, he's not going to be in the league that long, in my opinion.
Wow.
And the fact, and I don't think he is. I really don't think he's going to be in the league that long. I think, I know they picked him in the first round, so he's more than likely going to get a the opening day start over Colt McCoy. But I do believe he's going to have a rough time of it, especially in the black and blue division of the AFC North. I think he...
Well, I agree with that part.
The defenses that he's going to go up against, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, and Baltimore, are going to make his head spin. I don't think he's going to flourish as well as the Browns want him to. He's going to lean heavily on his tight end, and especially on his running back, because it's always been said that Trent Richardson is going to be the bell cow, 25, 30 touches each game. So
yeah.
So that,
well, the West Coast offense, I mean, it'll. See, here's what I think. I agree with you that, you know, they're going to have a tough go of it because they're in the AFC North and there are a bunch of powerhouse teams there, but they're also older teams that need to restock. Pittsburgh did a pretty good job this year at restocking. They got rid of some of their old product, brought in some new product. But Baltimore, they're aging. They're still good, but they're aging. And with Ray Rice sitting out, at least some of this voluntary stuff. Running backs sitting out never really equates to having a good year. But we'll see. But I believe Brandon Whedon is going to do very well in this system if they get him another good quarter, another good receiver. Now, they went out and they got Richardson, they got Whedon. They had a pretty decent a pretty decent offensive line. Hayden Hillis did very well. I think Richardson, being the three-tool back, is going to have a pretty good season, which will allow Whedon to hit his tight end, to hit Greg Little, maybe Masakwai, maybe even, what's my guy's name, Rabisky, and we'll see what happens. I know Cleveland, I know they're going to hit Joshua Cribbs. He's going to use Joshua Cribbs. But they need to find a number one receiver up there to give him a go-to guy on the outside. I think Whedon will take the job from Colt McCoy unless Colt, you know, steps up a little more and says, you know what, hell, it's my job. He's a winner. Colt McCoy's a winner. But he's got to do it consistently on this level. And apparently, Mike Holmgren does not believe he can do it. So, we'll see what happens in Cleveland. But I thought we'd talk about that because they're a young team. They're a young team, and they have nowhere to go but up. And I think they can do it. Maybe not to the top this season because I think Cincinnati's going to really challenge for that spot. We'll see what happens. All right. Another interesting note here in the NFL, and Adam Schefter stated this, I believe it was Wednesday, that he feels as though all of the NFL draft picks, all of them, will be signed by Memorial Day. Thanks to the new CBA and, you know, the leverage that it gives the owners versus the rookies coming in because everybody's slotted for a certain amount of money and da-da-da-da-da. I think maybe a third of the first round has already signed. I know Claiborne can't sign until after college because he has to finish. And I believe Luck can't sign until after June or something like that, or beginning of June because of school.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to delay RG3 a little bit because what RG3 gets depends on what Luck gets. But if, you know, RG3 gets paid, as you know, Daniel Snyder loves to pay his players. But, you know, if RG3 gets 30-something million, you know that Luck's going to get 40-something million. It's not going to be that big of a difference from last year. But, you know, the domino effect that we normally see, not even around this time, maybe in late June, early July, where, you know, first overall pick signs and then everybody else falls in line, that's not happening.
Uh-huh.
You're noticing a lot of different players like, look, I'm going to get paid now. I'm going to learn the system now. I'm going to get in and try to win a job now. How do you see it going down, Jerry?
I think I have to agree with what you have to say because the fact is the pay scale, it is more favorable for the teams. So they'll be able to sign their players and get their players all in on time, regardless of whether it's after the school year or whatever college they're in. The regular season training camp.
OTAs.
Yeah, OTAs, whatever. Whenever time they need their players to be in, I think there won't be any holdouts. For the simple fact is the pay scale is more favorable for the teams that drafted these guys. So it would behoove the players to get in to be able to learn the system, to be able to produce for the teams that they have been drafted to. So,
well, I want to make a quick observation as well. You notice maybe a week after Terrell Suggs' injury was announced and he had surgery, guess who signed their contract and is already in minicamp?
Right. You're talking about the rookie.
Upshaw.
Upshaw, absolutely. Yep. Yep.
He knows that that's a spot that he can have right now.
Right.
And possibly maintain because Terrell's older. He's coming off he's going to be coming off of a hard injury.
Oh, yeah, very hard.
And it's not something that you can return to at 100% and be 100% better. It's going to be difficult for Terrell to get that explosion. I believe Sean Merriman had a very similar injury, and he's never been the same since. He's bounced around from team to team.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not saying that's going to happen to Suggs, but it could happen. But Upshaw, he's like, hey, get it done. Get it done. Let's go. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, it's a strong possibility when you do something to your Achilles that it takes a it's a long road. It's, in fact, in my opinion, it's a longer road if you screw up your Achilles than if you had an ACL. An ACL, they perfected that with a science that it takes several months for you to rehab. Basically, the first year that you're out of the ACL surgery, you pretty much get your confidence back. You strengthen your knee up. The following year, the second year after you get your ACL, is you should be back, basically back to normal, as long as there's no complications. Achilles is a different story. There's a lot of stress on your Achilles, quite naturally, the back of your foot. The tech connects to your bottom of your foot to your main bone in your leg. So it takes a lot of stress, and especially on a football player, it takes a long time to get that Achilles in. Like you said, Sean Merriman was never the same because of he had an Achilles injury. And you're starting to see more and more of those happening. And if you notice that or not, you're starting to see more and more of those happening. And that's like a red light or to a team when one of the players gets the Achilles. I don't know what the medical data, they probably have it, that they probably have come to the conclusion that anybody who gets an Achilles, depending on the severity of it, won't ever be the same again because it takes a
harsh. It's a harsh injury.
Exactly, exactly.
You start shopping around for their replacement within the next year or two.
Yes.
And it just so happened that the Ravens had drafted this guy prior to getting it. So, you know, call it dumb luck, call it a luxury pick, call it whatever you want, but it just so happens that they got it. They got Upshaw, and they can put him in his natural position now as a DN-type pass rusher. But we'll see what happens. I just wanted to get your opinion on all the draft picks getting in early and stuff like that and having a full summer to get better, even though this past year it looked like those rookies did better without the full load of mini camps because they're not getting bombarded with so much. So in my opinion, if I were a head coach in the NFL or offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator in the NFL, I would keep it basic and let them excel and, you know, then start adding new stuff.
Well,
that would be me because it looked like last year a lot of rookies stepped up and had very good games. I mean, very good seasons last year.
Well, you know, even though the NFL is trying to do a lot of innovative things, the coaching in the NFL is basically very conservative. They dwell in tradition. So the tradition is you get these rookies in, you get them in rookie camp, you get them in mini camp, OTAs, which transition them into training camp. Because of what happened last year, everything was condensed. They had to quite naturally simplify things and condense things because of the time frame. Well, don't think because what happened last year and a few things worked for rookies last year that they're going to stay with that formula. For the most part, anytime they've had the full array of opportunities to put these guys in pads or shorts or whatever to train them and get them an idea of what's going on before the regular season starts, they're going to do that because that's the traditional way that they do things. That's what they've been taught to do from whoever mentored them in before they got their head coaching job, and that's what they're going to do. Tried and true. Keep it like this. Don't try to do anything different because your job, you may save your job. So they're going to do it the way that it's always been done, not something like they had a scramble to do things last year. It could work. I don't think anybody's going to do that. I think they're going to go back to the old tried and true way.
So. Well, we'll see. We'll see. I hope these offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators, and head coaches learn from last year that you can have a lot of success as long as you keep things basic. I really think that would be a good thing. But let's move off of football because I want to do a preview of the NFL season, but I'm not sure if I'll be able to do it because I'll be in school and I'll also be moving soon, so we'll see what happens. You okay?
I'm fine.
What is that? You got your old-time radio going on?
No. No, 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 no.
Uh-oh, he's got some theme music, ladies and gentlemen. He's going to play his music at some point. I can see it right now. Anyway. What in the world are you doing, Jerry?
I'm previewing, but that's okay. I'm waiting for my man to make the announcement. I'm not going to do it, so. I don't know if he talked to you.
Nobody. Oh, yeah. For Friday?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll talk about that later on.
Okay.
Talk about that later on.
No problem.
Anyway, let's move on to another subject matter that isn't of much concern to a lot of folks nowadays, but would have been maybe 5-6 years ago. Tiger Woods. Let's hear what he has to say about his new mindset in playing golf.
You just have to hit the ball well all week. And I think I've done that, two times here. And the rest of the time, it hasn't been quite spot on. And all peach golf courses do that to you. Whether it's here or Whistling Straits, or maybe this year, at Kiowa, it makes you have to hit the ball well here.
So, is Tiger being retrospective in his career, saying, okay, well, I got to hit it straight. I just can't whack the ball 300 yards anymore. I've got to have actual accuracy or stuff
Hello?
Like that.
Hello?
Hey, what? What?
I'm saying hello. Is that something? Is that an epiphany or something he just had? What
I guess.
wasn't that part of the idea to do with a golf ball in order to get it to where you wanted to go? You got to hit straight. Hello.
Well, I mean, I think he's talking more about the particular course, but I think it, as you're saying. That should be your goal every time, no matter what the course is. You know, you don't have a lot of zigzag courses. I can recall, and this is no reflection on the course creators, but I guess you can say it is. When Tiger came out, all the courses were short, and he was killing the ball. And then all of a sudden, after a couple years of him, destroying the competition, all these courses became longer with more angles and more geometry became the talk of these courses, and they all became tougher. Tiger still did well. Then his incident with his wife, and we know he's gone down ever since. So, if I'm not mistaken, a lot of these courses have reverted back to what they normally were. They're not as long, and they're not as geometrically challenged.
Why do you think that?
Well, because his dominance has ended. I'm going to be honest with you. I think because Tiger, don't even go there. I know where you're going. Don't even do it. I'll let you do that with Mac. Not today. But
what are you talking about?
Okay. I thought she was going to say something.
No.
But, okay, but I think because Tiger's his his dominance and his power is not as it once was, and he's not as dominant, and people aren't scared of him. That's what I think. Now, I'm going to let you say what you think, but I think I know what you're saying. You're going to think that I think I know you're going to say.
No. See, you're trying to be too politically correct. Anyway, what I was going to say is, if they revert these courses back to the time when Tiger was dominant, what makes you think that he won't reinvent himself because the courses are reverted back to when he was originally dominant? You follow me? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. Why would the courses revert themselves back to when Tiger was dominant? Is that because they want Tiger to be dominant again to increase the revenue of the golf again?
Yes.
The interest and perk the interest of the golf again and get Tiger a decided advantage. That smells of conspiracy theory, and I don't know if that's entirely true. I mean, you may have a different opinion, or you may agree with what they're doing and think along the same lines, but that doesn't make any sense to me. I don't know what you think about that.
Well, it's like this. I think that the whole Tiger scare of him being dominant is over. And with it being over, you don't need these monstrous courses. You know? And there's a young 20-something-year-old coming out every week winning these golf tournaments now.
Okay.
And with these young 20-somethings coming out winning these golf tournaments, it's like, okay, well, you know, let's ramp it up. Let's give them someone to compete with. We know Tiger brings money to the sport. So if Tiger is a little bit more dominant, then that means there's more money for everybody.
So,
and then we'll let him lose to some of these young 20-somethings and create new stars. It's all about the money. I'm going to be honest with you.
So you think that they're trying to bring these courses back to help the brother from another mother? Is that what you're telling me?
No. What I'm saying is they're trying to bring these courses back to stimulate more revenue and interest in the sport so that others other than Tiger can generate a lot of money. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but the fact is those others, when the course was played in Tiger's favor, they weren't excelling because Tiger was so dominant. What makes you think that these young guns, for lack of a better word, are going to be able to compete when Tiger was so dominant if these courses are being reverted back to Tiger's
where they were before?
Yeah.
Because these young guns, as you put it, were 14, 15, and 16 years old.
Okay.
And they grew up watching how Tiger struck the ball and how he played. And
right.
If you look at some of them, their game looks like what Tiger's used to look like.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that you have a lot of these young cats coming out who are able to stay on the same line with him. Lefty, he always was able to keep up with Tiger. He just couldn't beat him. But now he can beat him. So if you put him on a shorter course and he's already got the confidence that I can beat Tiger Woods, that's the old generation right there. And then you got the younger kids coming out and winning these tournaments too. To me, it's more of a stimulus plan, if you want to go political on it. It's a stimulus plan. We're going to stimulate our economy. Our economy right now, our chief export and import is Tiger Woods. Lefty is a close number two. But the more we bring these new companies in, the more interest we get, the more sponsors we get, translation, more money we get. So I think it will behoove a lot of these courses to change the way they are and generate some interest in the sport. Because let's be honest, if Tiger's not playing that week, a lot of folks aren't paying attention. Even if he is playing, unless he's in the hunt and it's like the last day of the tournament, people aren't interested. All they'll say is Tiger's doing, you know, he's fifth on the leaderboard going into the last day of the event. Tiger's going to charge up. Can he charge up? But day one, oh, Tiger Woods is here. Let's see what he does. Terrible day one. Let's see if he can make up day two. Decent day two. But he finishes 12th or 15th in the whole tournament. No interest. Let him finish in the top five. Let him be battling for the title of that golf tournament. Then you get the attention. Then you get the news media. Then you get the sponsors. So I'm just saying it would behoove the PGA to do that. That would be my opinion. But, you know, I'm but a man. I want to hear your opinion, ladies and gentlemen. You can dial 347-637-3220. Again, the number's 347-637-3220. And let's talk about it. Let's chop it up. Let's be all we can be. Yeah, anything else you want to say about golf before we move on?
Move on.
Move on. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time. It's time. It's baseball time.
I want winners.
That's what I've been saying all week. That's what I've been saying all week. I want winners. And ladies and gentlemen, before we get into my personal issue in baseball, which Jerry's going to enjoy talking about because he's an old fart, let's talk about the major issue going on in Boston. What in the bloody blue? Last year it was fried chicken and beer gate. This season, early on, it's golf gate. Let's hear what Curt Schilling, a former Boston Red Sox, former Diamondback, former Philly, let's hear what he has to say about this whole issue with Josh Beckett.
I guess I'm speechless after all of it, given everything that's happened, given how last year ended, given all the things going on this year and, you know, passing of Carl Bean and everything, and, you know, a fan base that cares as much about the Red Sox in some cases as they do life itself. It just, I can't comprehend any of the comments that came out of that post game.
And he's talking about what was said about Mr. Beckett after the game. You know, no matter what happened, he was asked about, you know, the golf incident. And Bobby V saying, well, he's hoping it wasn't golf. He doesn't think he would do something stupid enough to hurt himself or hurt the team. But it turns out he did. So you're a New Yorker. You're a Mets fan. I know you don't like Boston per se, but talk to me. What do you think is going on with Boston?
Well, they interviewed Josh Beckett.
Yeah.
And this is a dumb thing about what Josh Beckett did. And this is typical of him not getting it. They asked him about his golfing, supposedly Golfgate, and he says, my personal time is my personal time. Josh Beckett, you do not get it. You were, and that is exact words. My personal time is my personal time. I'm not making any level of those words up. That's exactly what he said. He doesn't get it. That's the problem with these players in Boston. You got a lot of jailhouse lawyers in the locker room, including Curt Schilling, who's not helping because he's totally against, basically totally against Bobby Valentine. Bobby Valentine is between a rock and a hard place. The owners I don't think they hired Bobby Valentine to straighten him up, but Bobby, this is what I think is going on. Bobby, we're going to hire you to straighten him up, but in the back of their mind, well, we like our guys and we really don't want you to do too much. Just try to get them in line, but don't be nice about it. Bobby Valentine is saying, no. You basically, you hired me to straighten these guys out. And now I'm showing you how these guys are so pampered and so much running the inmates are running the jailhouse versus the management running the inmates. this is a problem. I can see these guys getting purged from this team. Some of these guys that supposedly are Boston favorite diehard by the fans, I can see some of these guys getting purged because the mindset has to change in Boston. It seems like Bobby Valentine tries to come down hard on these guys, and the Boston fans and the management above Bobby Valentine say, no, don't do this. These guys are fan favorites, or we love these guys, when in fact these guys are absolute jerks.
Babies.
Exactly. Absolute babies. And the fact is, all this is coming to light now. I think Bobby Valentine decided to say, you know, I'm gonna say something about Euclid, and then realize, oh, I don't really have the backing of the management. I'm going to sit back. I take that back. I'm going to sit back and let these guys expose themselves. I'm not going to expose them. I'm going to let them expose themselves, and then everybody will realize what I've been trying to do or what I'm thinking or what I'm saying. They'll see it in front of their face. I don't have to push it. I don't have to push it. It's going to be thrown in your face how these guys really are, and this is not going to stop. This is just one of many guys that are going to put the foot in their mouth or take a wrong step and expose themselves as they are, how they torpedoed Terry Francona because he was a nice guy and they won championships with him and they took advantage of him. Bobby Valentine's not going to go for that. He's not going to get taken advantage of. He's going to do it his way. These guys are going to have to toe the line. If they don't toe the line, management is going to have to step them, saying, you know what? We thought we brought Bobby in here, and he could get these guys in line in a nice way, and these guys will listen. But these guys are babies. They don't want to listen to anybody. They think because they've been doing this for so long that this is the way they're going to do it, and nobody can tell them any different. That's just like a kid being spoiled. You follow what I'm saying? You understand what I'm saying?
Well, this is my question then. Is Bobby one and done?
No. Like I said, I'm telling you, because the fact is more and more of these guys are going to get exposed because they can't help themselves. They cannot help themselves because they've had it their own way for so long. They think that they're running the asylum and not Bobby Valentine, and they're going to be exposed. Bobby's going to just sit back and let these guys expose themselves. And this is one of many guys that are going to do it. Some of these guys on that team get it. Josh Beckett doesn't get it. He, obviously, if you saw that press conference and he said, my personal time is my personal time. When you are excused because of an injury and can't pitch, your personal time means that you try to get yourself together in order to help the team to be able to pitch. You don't go on a golf course and start hitting balls and playing 18 holes. That's crazy. I can't believe that.
Not to mention the night before they did a 12 or 14 inning game or something like that, and Beckett did not volunteer to be one of the pitchers. He could have done it.
Yeah.
He could have done it and still played, you know, the next day. But
Unbelievable.
I'm just saying that there's an issue there that needs to be taken care of, and I'm afraid that Bobby Valentine is going to end up falling on the sword because, as you said, Jerry, the fans and management, you know, they care more about the player aspect of it than they do the manager. That's
right.
Why they let Terry Francona go. And Terry didn't even want to go to the best 100 Red Sox celebration they had earlier in the year because of the way that Boston threw him under the bus after they let him go.
Right.
You know, because first it was a mutual parting. then they became, well, Terry couldn't do this, Terry couldn't do that. It's not really Terry's fault, but Terry allowed this to happen. You know, so that's the situation. It's not a healthy environment in Boston. It's really not. And I'm afraid that Boston might be headed toward another 80-year slump. If, let's say after Big Poppy leaves, after Pedroia, Pedroia's got a couple more years of being extremely talented, then he's going to start to tail off a bit. Euclid is already knocking on the door. Who else they got? They really don't have too many other decent. Well, they got Gonzalez, but they got him from San Diego. He's had a couple miles on him already. So I don't know where Boston's going to be headed in a couple of years, but if they don't get their act together, especially their pitching staff, where all this trouble's coming from, you know, it's like, what in the world? They need to get their young gun pitchers and do something with them, because the vets, so to speak, are causing a lot of trouble. And it's not looking good for the home team. I just thought I'd throw that in there. Before we get to basketball, I'll be remiss if I don't talk about this, because I know the master plan has had it in the back of his head. He wanted to talk about this and jump down my throat and all that other stuff.
Oh, no, 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 no. You follow your agenda, and then when my time...
This is part of the agenda.
Okay.
This is part of the agenda. I was leading up to it. All right, ladies and gentlemen, fantasy baseball. Nothing, old guy. Jerry Taylor is the number one team in our league.
Wait a minute. Say that again.
Jerry Taylor is the number one team. Your team is the number one team in our league.
Wait a minute. Say that one more time. Three strikes.
Say again.
Say that one more time.
No, I'm not going to say it again. I'm not going to give you the satisfaction.
This is too easy. This is too easy.
No, it isn't, Slim.
It's too easy.
But right now, yours truly, Mr. FSP, is running kind of scarcely in fourth place, and I'm facing the ATM. And right now, it's 13-7, our score. I want to say that Josh Hamilton, who Jerry traded for in a trade I never would have let happen, but I was only one veto.
That was the trade. I can believe it. Carlos Gonzalez, he was my first pick in my draft. And I traded him for Josh Hamilton. And that guy had to think he was getting a steal when he got Carlos Gonzalez. And I took a shot. I said, you know what? I love Josh Hamilton. I think he's focused, playing for a contract. I'm going to take a shot. And I don't know how many other guys in the league saw that and said, oh, my God, why is he trading Gonzalez for Hamilton? All takes the mass. It's all part of the master plan. Now, go ahead. I'm sorry. I digress.
You know what? You're such a jerk. But anyway, so as everybody in the sporting world knows, Josh Hamilton decides to have the best baseball week of his life, this week. So Josh Hamilton is the sole reason why Jerry's ahead of me in the batting categories. I mean, literally, he's the sole reason why.
Wait a minute.
Stop batting.
No, man, stop crying. For the simple fact is, boy, who I traded you, Carlos. Now, imagine if I still had him, how dominant I would be. You're lucky I traded Carlos Beltran to you. I really didn't. I told you when I traded to him, I really didn't want to give up Carlos Beltran because I thought he was going to have a good season, and he's on the same par, not that far away from Josh Hamilton and the week he's having. So you can't just say Josh Hamilton because your Carlos Beltran has been smacking the ball out of the stadiums too.
But not as dominant as Josh.
And what can I tell you?
I'm going to run down the categories, ladies and gentlemen. It's 21 categories. 21 categories.
Bing,
and
bang,
my
boom.
Pitching has been terrible. I mean, T-E-R-R-able.
I told you.
I haven't had these many losses. The most losses I've had any week, well, we've only had like 6 weeks of baseball, but I've only had like three to four losses in 1 week.
I told you.
This is terrible.
I told you pitching sucked. I told you in the beginning of the season your pitching sucked.
Currently, ladies and gentlemen, the at-bats are 171 to 165. Runs, well, okay, I'll give you my stats. My are the first stats. Jerry's are the second stats. So 165 to 171. Runs, I have 28 to his 26. Hits, 52 to 48. Home runs, thank you, Josh Hamilton, 11 to 16. We're tied at RBIs at 33. I have two stolen bases. He has three. I have 24 walks. He has 25. I have 30 strikes. He has 31. I have one error. He has three. The batting average, I have 315. He has 281. And that's been a really hard category all week long, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Now we go to the pitching stats. I have 15 to his 12 appearances, 54 innings pitched to his 58. This is the telltale sign of the week. I have one win out of 15 appearances, guys. He has six wins out of freaking 12 appearances.
Thank you very much.
Silence. I have six losses.
Ouch.
He has two. I have four saves. He has three saves. My pitchers have given up so many daggone hits, 60 hits to his 44. I have 18 walks to his 17, 33 strikeouts to his 56. This is a killer right here. My ERA is 4.5. His is 2.95. My whip is 1.44. His is 1.05. I have one blown save. He has none.
Hey, and the one blown save that I would have had, I had Rodriguez out of my lineup. I have not, if I can't recall, I have not had a blown save this year.
Blow these. Anyway.
I'm telling you, this is too easy. I can't believe
the
type of lineup I drafted, plus the lineup I traded for, plus the lineup I'm taking off the waiver wire. My pitching is kicking ass. My players are kicking ass. I picked two guys up off the waiver wire that nobody, they were sitting there for so long. I say, you know what, I've been targeting these guys. I said, let me wait, let me see how these guys do. These guys are doing well. They happen to be on the same team. I said, you know what? It's time. I got to jump on these guys. I got to give up Hunter Pence and Shane Victorino. And for your information, Mr. Vic, Cole Hamels and Shane Victorino, if they don't get turned around in Philly,
are
be on the chopping block. Tell me if I don't know what I'm talking about with players. Hunter Pence and Shane Victorino, that whole Philly team is hot. Garbage. Hot garbage. If you look at their ever since I got rid of them, what Hunter Pence and Shane Victorino have done, they haven't done squat. Really, basically, they haven't done anything. And I'm so glad other guys jumped on them when I took them, because that's why I got rid of them, because I can see what's going on. They may get hot for a short spurt, but for overall, they are hot garbage.
Wow. Well, hey, you won the draft at all the Phillies. But I went and made a strategic move this week, hoping it pays off in the upcoming weeks. I picked up Ryan Howard off of waivers, put him on my DL.
Good luck.
Because I'm hoping that when he does return, he comes back a little hot. I know he's going to have a week or two of bad hitting, but right now Freddie Freeman is not doing a job for me at first base. Real quickly, I'm gonna run down our lineups, and again, if you notice, ladies and gentlemen, every category is close except for the wins and losses. of the pitchers. Every category is close, and we have one more day, which is Sunday. How many pitchers you got going Sunday, Jerry?
Hope springs eternal. How many pitchers? Oh, you'll see. You'll see on Sunday how many pitchers I have going. You'll see.
All right.
You'll see.
On my roster, I have Jonathan LaCroix, Chicago Cubs, Freddie Freeman. Excuse me, not Chicago Cubs. Oh, my goodness, he's playing Chicago Cubs. Jonathan LaCroix is Milwaukee. I apologize.
Mm-hmm.
Freddie Freeman, Atlanta. Justin Pedroia, of course, you know Boston. Alex Rodriguez, Derek Jeter, Adrian Beltran, Matt Joyce, who hit a home run falling down, by the way. I just want to point that out.
Okay.
The MVP of the NL, Matt Kemp. I told you I wasn't giving him up.
yeah, and what's he doing this week? He's in a serious slump this week.
Hey. Shut up. Carlos Beltran, J.J. Hardy, who actually had a spectacular week this week, Jason Hayward, and Chase Headley. Hayward and Headley are on my bench right now. I'm thinking about moving one of them to the utility spot. But Jerry has Yadley Molina, Brian LaHare, Omar Infante, Martin Prado, Starlin Castro, Billy Butler, freaking Josh Hamilton, Alan Craig. And this is a great pick for him, and I hope he trades him to me because I want him, but I have nowhere to put him on my roster. John Jay.
I told you about him before, and you dismissed me. You dismissed me when I told you about John Jay. Am I right about that?
Silence.
Am I right about that? Tell me I'm right, because I when I picked him up or when I was talking about him, you say, I don't want your garbage or something like that. And I'm saying, I told you, John Jay, I'm telling you, he's got power, he's got speed, he steals bases, and he's got multiple positions. You just don't see the vision of the master. But that's okay. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
You know what? That's why you are bifocals now. Okay. Adam Jones, David Ortiz, and Alex Rios are all of Jerry's bats.
Powerful lineup. Powerful lineup.
And we have comparable bats. The problem is this. The pitching. And I admittedly, I understood that when I drafted my pitchers, and I've gotten rid of them, some of them, recently, but I realized that was my weak point, that I had maybe one or two good starting pitchers, but I need more than that. We're going to start with my team first. Tim Hudson. Shut up. David Price, Tommy Malone, Jonathan Papelbon, Brett Myers, Matt Capps, Joe Saunders, Rick Porcello, Joel Hanrahan, Drew Smiley, Tommy Hansen, and Justin Masterson. I got Masterson from Jerry for Ian Kinsler.
Ian Kennedy, yes.
Yes, but I got Masterson as well as Beltran for
mm-hmm.
Ian. And I'm glad I got Beltran, not so glad about Masterson.
Mm-hmm.
But, hey, it is what it is. Jerry's starting pitching, which is very good.
Absolutely.
Shut up. Ian Kennedy, Colby Lewis, CeCe Sabathia, Fernando Rodney, Henry Rodriguez, Jason Hamill, Jim Johnson, Chris Capuano, Derek Holland, Justin Verlander, Lance Lynn, and Andy Pettit.
Lance Lynn. What has Lance Lynn? Has he lost yet? No, he hasn't lost yet.
Oh,
amazing.
Up.
The number five pitcher, who I also talked to you about, and you told me was hot garbage, he hasn't lost. And he's absolutely been lights out ever since I picked him up. Hello.
I didn't call him hot garbage. I didn't say he was hot garbage. I said he was your waiver wire guy.
Yeah, waiver wire garbage, yeah. But guess what? 5-0 with a whip. I think it's below one, if I'm not mistaken. And he's a strikeout machine. Hello. Tell me the master doesn't know how to play this game. Tell me.
Your mom knows how to play because she helped you draft.
No,
exactly
no way.
Happened.
I'm telling you, Vic. I'm telling you, I told you I was going to win this league, and I'm dominating this league. Last week, when I lost by 10 to 11, it's because I didn't pay attention to the guys that were in my lineup.
You sound like LaMonica now. You sound like LaMonica. It's not that the fact that the other guy beat you. It's the
I'm telling you. I saw 2 days ahead of time that I was going to lose because I was trying to scramble to get as many guys in the lineup that's going to have at-bats. But I had left out, I'm trying to think who it was, either Craig or one of these guys out of the lineup on a day that they should have been playing, and I knew it was going to screw me. It came down to at-bats. That's what beat me. At-bats beat me. And I'm telling you, because I was following the whole for the, like 2 days, and I could see what was going on, and I screwed up. I think it's either Friday or Saturday. I screwed up with my lineup, and I could see. I was hoping it wasn't going to bite me in the butt. I was trying to recoup with some other categories, and I couldn't do it because of the bats. If you looked at what happened last week, the bats beat me. Beat me.
Well, I'm gonna beat you now, boy.
Ain't happening. 13-7 now, and the lead's only going to increase by tomorrow.
We'll see.
I try to tell you, young man, I'm trying to tell you this. I told you last year. I told you this year. Pitching. You go in the offensive category and you downplay your pitching, and then you try to scramble to get pitchers. It doesn't work. You can get offensive players off the waiver wire. Pitchers are harder to find. Quality pitchers are harder to find, unless you know exactly what you're doing and what you're looking for when you look on the waiver wire.
I can't wait to next show where you're crying. Well, you got lucky, Vic.
No. If you beat me, I've had a pretty good lead throughout the week. Right now, I'm leading 13-7. If you beat me, I'll absolutely tell you, you beat me. I'm surprised what happened. But I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, you want to make a wager? You can make a wager. I was waiting for you to make a wager last week before we started. But I guess things shrunk up between your legs and you didn't want to make a wager. I don't know.
Oh, you insult my manhood. Okay.
I don't know. I mean, I said it on the Smackboard. We never made a wager. I was waiting for you. But,
dude, you are such a loser right now.
I'm a winner. Play Mike Singleton, because I Want Winners is right here. I am winners.
No, I want winners, damn it. I want winners, and I want them now.
Anyway.
I'm going to win this week. I believe it's going to happen.
You keep believing that. You keep believing that you're going to overtake me in several categories. You have to overtake me in seven, eight categories, and that's not going to happen.
The batting categories are very close, and I think I can actually sweep them, other than home runs, unless we go on a home run tear. But the problem is, I know I'm not going to win the wins category. I got that. I know I'm not going to win the losing category. I got that. But I have to maintain, save, appearances, and walks are close, and strikeouts will be close. It's just that daggone ERA. That ERA and that whip and that one blown save is killing me. Killing me, man.
I'm telling you, my pitching, I'm proud of my pitching. I can't believe that you guys left some of these guys sitting on the waiver wire, and I've just picked them up. You guys are afforded the same information I am. I can't believe it's probably one of the best pickups on my pitching is Lance Lynn. I can't believe I actually got him. The next one is probably Jason Hamill. He's been pitching well, and Baltimore's been playing real well. And then you guys, I think some of you guys are so conservative. I've been trying to make trades. I've been trying to make trades with different people, in this league, and they want to stay true to their players, and they're just going down week after week they're going down, and they're going to stay true to their players, no problem. You see, I make the most moves in this league. You see that, right?
Yeah. Are you done?
Make the most moves in this league because I'm winning this league, and you guys, anybody who's listening, who's on in this league, you guys want to make moves? You guys want to win this league? You got to be aggressive. You stay with the players that you have now and they're not performing with you, you're only going to be what you are, a loser. I'm telling you right now.
Wow. Okay, with that being said, let's move on. Fantasy baseball is, I told you you'd like it. This is your first year playing. I told you you'd like it.
Oh, I love
it. Let's move on. We got 10 minutes left of live air, so let's touch upon the National Basketball Association.
Okay.
You got a lot of ins and outs right now. The Knicks are out. Sorry.
Sorry about that.
You saw that happening. The Clippers are on their way out.
Oof.
The Lakers joined them. Uh-oh. Also, the Bulls are gone. Are the 76ers a real threat? Are they a real threat? We'll talk about that real quick. But let's hear from Chris Paul on, whose fault it is that they lost the game, the Clippers, that is.
Tough loss because we put ourselves in position to win. It's tough. We sort of, like that game one, we took on that grit and grind mentality. Tonight we sort of, look like them.
Like them. That's an insult.
Yeah, exactly. That sure enough is an insult. You think that's bulletin board material? The Memphis Grizzlies will say, you guys play like us? Okay, you play like us and win this game in our house. Game 7's in the Grizzlies' house. Clippers are in trouble. Serious trouble because the Grizzlies are no joke and have no fear. Let me put it that way. That's one of these teams that is got a lot of heart and a hard play and from start to finish. So if they don't bring the Clippers, I'm talking about, don't bring their A game to the Grizzlies' house, they're going to go home and be able to watch the rest of the NBA playoffs sitting from the comforts of each and every one of their homes.
Do you think that the Grizzlies are serious contenders, or are they just better than the Clippers? And when they face either the Lakers or who are the Lakers playing? I forgot who the Lakers are playing. Denver. Do you think that they'll advance? Or I mean, last year they did pretty well too. Last year the Grizzlies did pretty well in the playoffs. So it's not like it's a fluke. But are they a serious team?
Memphis is a serious team because they play hard each and every night. The coach has them playing hard each and every time for the most part when they come on the court. So when you get that out of a team on both ends of the court, because they're a very good defensive team, and that's key in the playoffs, you're going to have a hard way to go, whether it's the first game or the closeout game. One way or the other, you're going to have a hard way to go. The Clippers are an inexperienced team in the playoffs. The Grizzlies, I think, have a very good shot, especially at home in a closeout game. This can go either way, but because it's a home team, I like the Grizzlies in this. I know that may be a shocker, but Chris Paul and what the heck's his name? The forward.
Blaine Griffin
on the other team, but the Grizzlies play collectively and are a very good team to defeat at home.
Okay. So let's move on to Denver and the Lakers. Now, Kobe's calling out his teammates again.
He should.
Kobe's challenging them. He even named a name. He named Andrew Bynum.
Right.
I mean, whoa. Talk to me. ATM, what's going on in Lakerland?
Hey, these guys, Andrew Bynum says the closeout game is basically an easy game. That was a slap in the face to Denver, and that was a dumb comment by Andrew Bynum for one, or for number two. Obviously, it's not an easy game, Andrew, because now you're in a game seven, and you're fighting for your life. Fortunately, you have world peace coming back to enhance the defense that you play. Magic Johnson said this: everybody's job is on the line except for Kobe's. Everybody's job is on
the line.
That's
true.
Mike Brown and all the players on that are on the line except for Kobe. If they don't win this game, he said Mike Brown is one and done, and they're going to break up this team. That's what Magic Johnson said on last night on NBA TV or wherever he was, or the ESPN, wherever show he was on. I heard it. I listened to him. And the guys that were sitting around him, Chris Broussard,
Barry,
they said, whoa. When he said that, they were surprised when he said it. And he said it again. I'm telling you, if they don't win this game, if they don't win this series, everybody's job is on the line, including Mike Brown. Including Mike Brown. He said, plain and simple. And I have to believe that that is the case.
I believe it's the case if they don't go deep in the playoffs.
Well,
just this one game, but advancing at least to the conference finals.
Well, they have to get past Denver first, which you're having a hell of a hard time doing to get any further into the playoffs. If they don't win this game, Mike Brown and his staff and any of those players are gone. Andrew Bynum, Paul Gasol, whoever else they decide to get rid of.
They can get something for Bynum because he's turning into a decent player.
He's a jerk.
He is, but somebody will see the value in his play ability and do something. But Denver just got rid of somebody for charges of criminal misconduct on the computer with minors.
Oh.
You hear about this.
Oh, yeah. Oh. I don't know what his real name is, but oof.
The Birdman wanted to be Big Bird on the computer with some little kids.
Yeah.
At least that's what the allegations are, and he's being investigated by the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, something's to it if the FBI is involved.
Yep.
Something is to it if it's done with, these major organizations. So it's kind of crazy, you know, how these players think they're above the law. And this goes to show you, ladies and gentlemen, your IP address is your name. It's everything. It's like your Social Security number.
All right.
So you got to watch it.
And Big Brother is looking.
Oh, yeah, trust me, they are.
Big Brother is looking. So if you're doing something foul, Big Brother is looking, and they will eventually find you out.
Well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about one more side. It's about the Eastern Conference in a minute, but I got to do this before we go off the air. Ladies and gentlemen, Fantasy Sports and Politics happens every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and it's with me and Jerry and whoever else shows up, and we have a great time talking about the week in sports. On Sundays, we have the Master Plan, and it begins at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And this week, real quick, Jerry, what are you going to talk about?
I'm going to be talking about fantasy baseball. I'm going to be talking about the playoffs because there's going to be some games on tonight that be closeout games. So I'm going to be talking about that. And I'm going to be talking about whatever else in the world of sports comes up or whatever else comes on my mind. So, you know, whatever comes out, it's going to come out. Let me put it that way. Just join in the fray. If you got something to say, talk to me. 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. is where I'm at.
All right. Then on Tuesdays, we have Compassion Dakini with Kim Fun. She's our hot mama right now. She's bringing in the listeners.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a totally different slant on what it is we talk about. It's more female and youth-oriented, so for children and adults. Young adults, stuff like that. Then on Thursdays, you have the FSP Crew Show with Jerry Black and Jeff. They have the latest guests and all that other stuff. They're very hot. And this coming Friday, mark your calendars, brand new show, Controversy, with Mac Williams and Jerry. It's called No Chaser. Political conversation. Oh, trust me. He's a brother with the Mitt Romney twist. Jerry's Barack Obama, and they're going to clash. Hannity and Combs is what you can call them, Hannity and Combs. So they're going to be doing that this Friday, 7 p.m.
We're going to kick it off with a two-hour show, 7 to 9. So tune in and join the fray, because I think the sparks are going to fly.
Oh, hell yeah. I might even tune in just to yell a little bit. We're welcoming them to the program and to the network. So
I'm excited about this. I've been talking to the brother, Mac. I'm excited about going back and forth with Mac.
that show might not be long enough, dude. You might have to put it on for 4 hours. I don't know. We'll see. But, yeah, this Friday, 7 p.m., check them out. I definitely will. It's my birthday this Friday, so...
Yeah.
So
what, you gonna be 50?
Oh, dude, you're just so wrong. You're making me pop. Oh, dude, you're so wrong. I will be 36 and proud of it, Mr. 52-year-old, 56-year-old. What are you,
58. 59? I'm 58 and proud of it, man. 58.
I made you younger than what you were.
That's
by
okay.
By the way, it's going to be like $25 for the ticket, guy. Just to let you know, okay?
No problem.
I'll let you know. So you can send it to me PayPal or whatever, but I'll let you know once I get more information. So, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we have 5 shows on this great network of ours, and we're building. We'll see what happens. But real quick, since we're in overtime, let's talk about the Eastern Conference. The 76ers, do they stand a chance? Do the Pacers stand a chance? And Boston and your boys, the Heat. Talk to me, Jerry. What's going on?
Well, the deal is this. I think the out of all those games, I think the 76ers stand a hell of a chance. We're talking about young guns, young legs against old legs. Sixers with Doug Collins, I think have a heck of a chance. A very smart coach, a young, enthusiastic team. Run these old men to the ground. I really see that happening. I like the Sixers. I know the guile and everything of the Boston is probably going to be favored, but I like the Sixers. I think this is an old story rivalry for many a year, and it finally come back since 2002. I think it was last time they showed up against each other. I like the Sixers. I'm excited about seeing this to see if the Sixers can pull this so-called upset.
I think it's going to happen, too. I think the 76ers with Iguodala, with I think that at what's my man, Elton Brand, will finally step up, and the center, can't remember his name, but I think they have a young nucleus, and I think they'll go to the conference finals. I think they'll go to their conference finals, and they'll face the Heat, who I think the Heat are going to easily dispatch of Indianapolis, or Indiana, of Indiana. I think so.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Because Granger, Green, not Dallenberg. Dallenberg is the 76ers. Granger, Green, what's my man that played for Georgetown? It's the center up there now.
I know who you're talking about. I know exactly who you're talking about. I can't think of his name right now.
Well, they're young, and I think it's not their time yet. They need a little bit more seasoning, I think. I think maybe a year or two, they'll be considered really top-notch players and a team that'll be reckoned with. But right now, I don't think that's the case. I think the Heat will take them in 4. I think the Heat will beat them in 4.
Mm-hmm.
So I see the Heat and the 76ers in the Eastern Conference Championship. And I see the Heat versus the Thunder. Now, I want to bring up a comparison. And this might be some money that you might want to lay on Oklahoma. Last time, Portland had the number one pick into the big dude was Sam Bowie, and they turned around and did it with Greg Oden. They
mm-hmm.
passed on Michael Jordan, and they passed on Kevin Durant.
Mm-hmm.
Oden is going to be out of the league, if not already out of the league. I'm not even sure if they cut him or not. But
I don't think they've done that yet.
Well, he was talking about in an interview he did with Yahoo about his dark days in Portland as far as the drinking, the drug abuse, and, you know, just the pressure of being the number one pick. And I think Portland did it again. They set up another franchise for a long tenure of success. And Kevin Durant is that player. And I believe Kevin Durant with Westbrook, Serge Ibaka, and the newly crowned Sixth Man of the Year, Chris Harden.
James Harden.
Thank you. I'm sorry. James Harden are going to be too much for Kobe, Bosch, and Wade. I think they go to the conference, to the NBA Finals again and lose. I would have picked them to win the championship, but I just think Kevin Durant and that group of guys in Oklahoma, they've got something for a couple years, a couple more years. And I think that it's not the king's time. That's the way I see it. How do you see it, Jerry?
I had said this on a couple weeks ago on a crew show that I think anybody who comes out of the West is going to win the championship. I don't think Miami – in fact, I know Miami is not going to win the championship. I see whoever is going to come out of that between San Antonio and the Thunder, that's who I see possibly coming out of there. The West is going to win the championship. Championships are won in close games. What's the weakness of the Miami Heat in close games? They don't win.
Yeah, they can't.
They don't win.
Close.
So they and they have one of the biggest choke artists that's going. He may win another MVP for the league, but he's one of the he's an MVP for choking in close games too. So,
well, we'll see what happens. I mean, Jalen Rose seemingly thinks that LeBron is clutch, but I don't agree with that. So we'll see. We'll see.
Well, you know, I and Mac and I went back. I should say going back and forth, but we had talked about this yesterday. I'll talk about it briefly because he brought up a good point. Anytime somebody comes up about Kobe, LeBron, he says to them, "Name me a defining moment, and a clutch moment of LeBron James's career." Can you name me one?
Other than in the playoffs or
in the playoffs? In the playoffs. In the playoffs.
He really hasn't had one.
That's the point of a great player, who wants the ball, and you know everybody knows LeBron does not want the ball if it's coming up to him to make the defining shot. The game-winning shot or the shot that's going to decide whether you win or lose in the playoffs, who runs away from the ball, who gives the ball up rather than be the man. Supposedly you are the man, you're the king, and you give the ball up. That's his M.O. And everybody in the league who plays in the playoffs knows that about LeBron. It's not like it's something new. It's not like I'm hating. That is a statistical fact about LeBron. When it comes to crunch time, don't give the ball. Or I don't want the ball. I'll give it to somebody else. You take the shot.
Mm-hmm. Well, Wade is actually the closer on that team.
Right.
Dwayne Wade is. And I can see that being a good thing for them. But in order for him to be considered clutch, I agree that he has to do it in the playoffs. He has to do it consistently. I will say this. I think Pat Riley, he succeeded and he failed at the same time. I think he succeeded at bringing excitement back to Miami and generating money with the organization. But I think he failed at putting together a championship team. Because I don't think this year, or maybe not even next year, the Heat win a championship. I just don't think so. But we'll see. We'll see. I might be wrong. I've been wrong before.
Well, in my opinion, Vic, as long as LeBron James is on your team, you will not win. Because he's not a clutch player. And in the playoffs, you have to have clutch moments, a defining clutch moment, or a whatever. In a playoffs, regardless of what level of the playoffs is, whether it's the first level of the playoffs or the second or the finals or even the NBA finals, conference finals, NBA finals, he is not a clutch player, plain and simple. And if you don't – supposedly he's the man, he's the king, and he's not a clutch player, you will not win. You'll have a harder time winning because he shrinks when he should be shining.
Yeah, you're right. You're right about that. You're right. But we'll see. We'll see. So anyway, let's get ready to get out of here, Jerry, if you don't mind. I got to watch Transformers with my kids.
Oh, boy. Okay. Well, from the I Want Winners to You Are Losers, you've been listening to...
Wow. No, we're not going out like that. We're not going out like that. Do it correctly, dude. Do it correctly, guy, because that was bad. I'm going to get you for that, too. I'm going to get you for that.
Well, from Jerry A.T. Money and Vic Gardner, you've been listening to...
Thank you.
Fantasy, sports, and politics.
What? Get ready to rumble!
You want to talk smack? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy, sports, and politics.